Thank you so much for surviving to this point in the day. I know yesterday the keynote and the party went off. I was talking to someone who said that they finished at 4 a.m., which I was quite impressed because I had him speaking at 9 o'clock, so he was quite happy about that. My name is Miles Matheson. I'm a solution specialist for Application Platform. I'd like to introduce my colleague, Anna Tarasoft. We have put together an open mic session, an open panel, to talk about mission-critical SQL Server solutions and Microsoft Azure solutions for SQL. And I'd like to introduce our panel today. Just going from Cameron, I'll start with Cameron. If you just introduce yourself briefly, say what your role is, then pass the mic along. Is that working okay?
Is this working?
Yep.
It is. Cameron Gardner, I'm a program manager in the Azure CAT team. Before Azure CAT team, I was in SQL CAT team, and I work in the team that is, amongst other things, porting SAP applications to Microsoft platforms.
Hi guys, my name's Hannah Gray. I'm actually a back-end developer with a strong focus on SQL. I work at Xero, which happens to make some accounting software that you might have heard of, and so I spend a lot of time in SQL databases and working with SQL.
Scott Klein, data platform evangelist out of Redmond, focusing on SQL Server, Azure SQL Database, and our cloud data platform technologies. You have
one. I do.
I'm Logan Kraus. I work with Sid. We are the leading SAP and Azure team at the moment. Everyone is seeming to catch up. It seems to be a thing. It's fantastic. We do a lot of SQL, and we also do other technologies as well that we're trying to host on Azure in collaboration with Cameron and his team that he's got.
Thank you. My name is Tara Jana. I'm a SQL PFE based out of Melbourne, Australia. And part of my work is more about fixing issues what customers have if you're in a very tedious situation. Do health check analysis, and also moving into Azure Ranger role, which will be 50-50 of SQL and both Azure and Space. So I'm looking forward to see you guys more often. Thank you very much.
Cool. So we've got a huge number of deep, experienced experts here. What I want to do is I just want to warm up with a couple of questions for the panel. And then what I'd like to do is that Anna and I are going to split into two sides of the room, and we're going to allow you guys to ask these guys pretty much anything. So I guess probably the first thing that I want to ask the panel is that now that I've got so many choices around where my DR strategy can live, I can do a lot of different options on-premise, I can do lots of off, in the cloud, whether it's on Azure or other platforms, or I can do a hybrid approach. What should I be thinking about when I'm looking at a DR strategy for my database platforms now?
Money.
I knew Logan wasn't going to leave with that anymore.
So one of the things that we've found is a big driver for companies nowadays is that you've got a DR site that usually sits at a data center, either being at in Auckland, it sits in Wellington, or it sits down in Albany, or wherever you've got it going. And that's costing you constantly money. It's not doing anything, because most companies, their DR site is offline, or what I like to call offline. In other words, no one logs ever into it. You tend to not have it licensed properly either. You only have it licensed for when it goes into a DR switch. And that costs you a fortune, costs you exactly the same amount of money as what you're paying for on your online or your production system. So anyone that we go and talk to, and they come to us and they say to us, where should we save money, especially surrounding our DR, we say, go to the cloud with a SQL Server 2014.
So I have to second that, because one of the scenarios, or some of the scenarios that we're pushing very hard from Microsoft is that scenario. If you look at, and I mentioned this in the session I just did previously, if you look at, and we're paying attention to the East Coast of the United States, a couple years ago, this hurricane came up and just wiped out the East Coast. And a lot of the companies, like in New York, had their data centers and their secondary data centers in that area on the East Coast, and so they were out. And so while you laugh, it is about money. It's about TCO. So instead of spending all this, hundreds of thousands of dollars, a year or a month on the secondary data center, you can lower your TCO drastically and actually get better performance and better uptime and better SLA by using a hybrid approach, by putting one of your, you know, from a SQL server, you can still get, real uptime and be able to recover from that much easier and lower your TCO drastically.
A couple additional points. A lot of SQL applications out there have got a application tier, could be a web tier, and a database tier. We have a service in Azure called Azure Recovery Services. Today, Azure Recovery Services integrates with Hyper-V. So anything that's sitting in a Hyper-V VM, you can replicate that VM into Azure. The application tier that sits on VMs is almost hosted for you free of charge, because whilst the VM is not running, you are only paying for the storage, and the storage is, how much is storage? It's so...
They keep changing the price.
It's so little in the scheme of things, it's zero. Those of you who follow the Azure blog would have seen that we released some pre-configured virtual machines that make setting up always on from your on-premise environment to your Azure subscription a lot easier. So you still do need to use database level tools to replicate databases into Azure. You cannot use Azure Recovery Services. And the reason for that is Azure Recovery Services does not replicate all of your disks in exact time synchronization. So your F drive and your G drive could be snapshotted at slightly different times, which is fine for a web server or some kind of app server, but disastrous for anything that has some kind of database on it. If you check my blog, in a few weeks' time, I've written a blog on how to do this for SAP customers. I've mentioned the Hyper-V scenario. We just bought a company called InMidge, and we're going to enable that same functionality for VMware and physical servers as well. So you'll be able to take a VMware-based environment and replicate that into Azure, using an agent called Scout. Coming up.
I'm going to turn this on its head a little bit. I absolutely agree with everything. It really is about cost. But the one other factor that comes into it, which really does come back to cost as well, is actually physicality. So when you're planning your DR site, one of the things that's really hard is to find, especially as you're scaling, is to find a place that you can put it that can actually literally physically fit everything you want in your DR site. And especially one of the things we found as we've grown and grown and grown, that actually starts to really shrink down the possible locations that you can put that. And one of the minimizing factors we've had is SAN, right? The base of everything related to databases is our SAN, and there's only a maximum size and a maximum cable length and a maximum distance that you can start placing everything around your central SAN. And so one of the things we've really sort of been looking at is the hybrid model, because one of the limiting factors around the physicality of where we can actually put servers comes back to the ability to no longer have a certain foot or meter distance requirement that we have to try and cram everything into. It's an interesting side effect.
Wow. So I got one other question. This is a basic question for me, guys. You're going to all laugh about this. So this comes up all the time for me, and it sounds really crazy, but when I look at the different failover models that I have with SQL Server today, so I've got clustering, I've got mirroring, I've got always on, I've got log shipping. What is the most effective HA model should I be thinking about when I'm architecting my databases going forward? Should I be doing always on? Should I be doing SQL clustering?
Always on, hands down. I mean, if you're not using SQL Server 2012, anybody who's using 2012, 2014? Anybody still on 2008?
Keep 2005? Your hand up if
you're on 2005. 2000? Excel? Access, yeah, I was going to say Access? Yeah. Fox Pro? Okay. Yeah. Brave man, raise his hand.
Hey, Scott, there's one question I've got. So SQL Server 6.5,
Well, I was not. I wasn't gonna, no seven.
I'm gonna, oh, seven. Yeah. I skipped a one.
I wasn't gonna go that far. I was gonna you know embarrass them somewhat, but not completely. But I guess I crossed that path when I said Excel and Access. So I think always on I think is the answer, because if you're familiar with log shipping and so mirroring, yeah, thank you, just your blank. So if you walk through, it's very simple. Always on is just click, 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 done, right? If I want to replicate multiple databases, it's literally click, 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 done. And that what allows us to do from the, we talked about these hybrid scenarios, is that I can easily spin up, we talked about the price points, right? I can easily spin up an Azure VM with SQL in it, domain join that to my on-prem environment, and set up always on, right? And so I get real-time replication through always on, and you can't do that with mirroring, you can't do that with any, so this is, always on, I think, is the way to go. Now, to me, it's always on.
So from a product point of view, we've actually documented it that mirroring is depreciated officially. So it says in the MSDN documentation that feature will be removed at a point in time. I don't think anytime soon. Log shipping, I don't think would be removed anytime soon, but always on, absolutely, is the way to go. That is the focus of the development effort.
So more granular control over what causes a failover and things like that.
Yeah.
Just to add on to that, so part of our job, we were doing a POC for a customer, and I wrote a complete blog on that. Eventually, it was more about which DR solution fits their build based on the fact that they were on 6.5. As you were saying, last year we migrated this customer and wanted to figure out a solution which is more appropriate from our HADR perspective. We started looking at all the aspects. We looked at log shipping, we looked at SAN replication. Now, the point which I really need to highlight is you need to understand the difference of HA and DR. Extremely two different things. Log shipping, DR, high availability, clustering. How do you join both the worlds together is what you get in always on. With 8 secondaries in SQL 2014 and one of the replica in cloud, that's what they're talking about. But looking at all the aspects and figuring out information and doing thorough testing, we figured out the cost, latency, performance-based stuff, and HADR came out to be the best so far. And this is completely from our testing with this customer, where we did a 3 months of POC with different technologies. And this is all real-time. With HADR, the best part is you don't spend on the cluster, and I'm sure you all already know about it, you don't spend on the cluster infrastructure or the shared disk drives and cluster shared volumes, etc. No IPs, no networking. What you need is just a framework of cluster, and you actually go ahead and put the always-on group within it. So you get the group, which is part of the cluster services, failover, which gives you availability, plus you also get out of any sort of situation, which is split brain, which you used to get with database mirroring. So that is completely taken off because the dependency is on the group, and you can have 10 databases in an always-on group, which you can failover. Plus you also get an always-on FCI, which is another solution which you can implement. But from the testings we have seen, and if the question was on that that front, from a cost perspective, performance-based latency, always on stands out. It's one of the best solutions so far.
Just another point, any solution or architecture that has a dependency on shared disk clustering, there are a couple of things coming down the track, I guess probably in the next 2 years, where shared disk clusters are going to become increasingly divergent from the path that other products and features are taking. So obviously always on does not have any shared disks, which is a good thing.
Can you repeat the question, Cam?
With always on, if you want to do file stream HA, you have to have shared disks. You can't have separate storage. You have to have shared. Is that going to change?
The answer is I don't know. I'll check on that one, but I suspect that for file stream, the answer is yes. There will be a hard requirement on that.
So that was great. You started the questioning, which is awesome. But what I haven't done is inspired everyone to ask questions. I know it's hard in front of your peers and colleagues to come up and ask questions. So I just want to model the kind of prize that you guys have the opportunity to win. But you have to ask a really serious question. So I'll just start off by putting it on first, just before the reveal. Now, there are only three of these, so it has to be a really, really, really good question. Okay. Now, the reason why you want to get this lovely Bath Road is that if you do ask the right question, you'll get to stand up and say that you are a SQL master. Okay. So we're going to start off by... Okay, all right. We're going to start off by asking the audience some questions. What I'll do is I'll do this side of the room. And what we'd like is that it's one question. It's not a five-part question, okay? So one question, not five. So what I'd like to do is just start off. Who would like to ask a question? I've got to derobe now.
I actually need to borrow your mic, guys. Your mic is not working. Can I just have one second? I will shout the question. Thank you.
It's a pretty simple question, but I'm probably just a bit out of date. But is the always on feature, is that still just an Enterprise Edition feature?
Yes.
Have you guys...
Upgrade.
Are you guys familiar with New Zealand pricing for Enterprise Edition?
Are you familiar with the pricing of SAP? Because I can help you with that.
We can help you with the business case for SQL Enterprise. You just to come and see us afterwards. We'll have a chat about business risk and why Always On's giving you better availability. Another question on this side.
There's currently limitations with DTC and Always On, which...
I am in charge of that particular development, at least making the business case in the background. I would be very optimistic that SQL 2016 will address that, but we cannot confirm or promise or
we'll hold you to it.
It is. Well, I'll say it is the highest within the stream for Always On. The highest priority work item is to provide 2PC.
Cool.
So that's been driven by, outside of New Zealand, they're large banks and airlines that use Oracle WebLogic or JBoss. I don't know if you know those middleware platforms, but they have XA connectors to SQL databases, and XA supports the transaction aware, and they are really pushing for that feature. And the business case is there. It's assigned. We have a prototype design. We'll be testing soon. So, yeah.
Cool.
There'll be one later if you come back. I'll tell you there'll be one little... provisor there, but it's not a big one.
Okay, we have a question here, sorry.
With the group talking about a hybrid kind of solution for DR, the uniqueness of latency that New Zealand has with the data centres being in the States or in Singapore at the moment, is there any difference to your advice? I know Australia's coming online soon, but even with that in place...
I guess just pay attention in the next 30 days, I guess. Australia's coming online, can't tell you when, but, at that point, there's really no, I don't think latency will be an issue at that point. Right? I mean, that's really your question, right? Mm.
Okay, yeah, a lot of your discussion was in your previous meeting, from your angle, your data centers are local in your own country in the States.
So a lot
of the answers, and the gentleman on the far right hand side is Singapore based, where the other data centers are. So a lot of those solutions are very much based with it. You know, data centers are local in terms of very high.
Yeah, and this is why when Australia comes online, do testing. Yeah.
Great question, but you know what? I was going to give you a bathrobe, but you gave two questions. See how strict I am with the bathrobes?
Oh, Miles, please.
I'll give you the one from my hotel.
Do we believe that's a bathrobe quality question? That's a vote of the audience?
Yes,
all right, that's one bathrobe coming your way. There's a gentleman here who's hot to trot to ask a question.
We have a mirroring environment where we mirror from Invermay, which is close to Dunedin, all the way to AgResearch in Ruakura, the financial systems for AgResearch, principles at Invermay, mirror is at Ruakura and Hamilton. The system has times where the 10-second cutout for the network communication causes it to flop over. It happens about once or twice a month. I've narrowed it down to being either VMware or a network issue. VMware could be, you know, when it's swapping machines around. Is there anything in high availability using synchronous that would help us in that situation? We want to use synchronous because it's financial system, so we need the reliability and to be sure that the transactions aren't processed at two ends at the same time, because if the link goes down, we want the processing only to occur at the principal. We don't want it to occur at the other end, and if it's a DR situation, we don't want to be in a situation where the where it would be happening at two ends, and then we have a disparity between the two systems. Is there anything in high availability which will address that for us?
Tara will go as well, but both mirroring and always on have very configurable timeout parameters. But if you're having 10 milliseconds.
Timeout. It usually happens when a machine is re-motioning, or we've had a network issue where they've dropped out power in the network, and, which is a 10 gigabit network.
The quality of the link, it needs a high quality link. Those sort of network characteristics are not compatible with synchronous replication of any kind. Well, I mean, we have customers in Mexico, in Latin America, going to US West. Who else is doing this? ING Bank in Australia have their core banking and their cards and CRM and their phone banking system is running always on synchronous over about 160 kilometres without an issue, and that's with pretty much the standard timeout parameters. Tara can talk more about that.
Just to add on to that, starting SQL 2012, I think most of you know that we changed the failure condition levels at cluster level. I don't know how many of you know about the failure condition levels in SQL 2012 in clusters, because that's going to be the key. Because when you're in high availability in always on, and because your resource group is within the cluster, you have now six different failover condition levels. So you define at what level you want the SQL to fail over, right? So by default, it's number 3. Which is for any critical message or critical error at the SQL Server level. But if you define that to be more granular, let's assume you have a database corruption and you want to fail over, you can define level 4 or level 5. Based on that, you can change things up. And that is basically on the resource itself. So once the resource has been created, the resource group for always on availability group, just right click, go to configure options, and you can configure the failure condition level. Also, because it's part of the cluster now, you have an option to go and change the is alive setting, which can actually span across between a few minutes. So you have that control now, starting SQL 2012, and in SQL 2014, it's pretty much the same. So failure condition levels gives you that flexibility. A 10-second thing or split brain issue can occur, and it was a limitation with database mirroring. From an always-on perspective, that's pretty much gone. That was the idea behind creating always-on, to actually reduce all these split brain issues and the problems which you are facing. Similar sort of thing with CDC on top of database mirroring, you get a log size which starts increasing because it uses the replication concepts of log reader agent on the background. So all that sort of thing has been taken care of in always-on. But just to give you an idea to answer specifically, it's the failure condition levels which you need to go and change, which will help you in not failing over. Thank you very much. Pleasure.
Right, I just want to change it up because I'm come to you, Leo. Don't you worry. I've got you, man. I see you there. But this side of the room is feeling, well, a bit sore because they're turning this way, looking at you guys. And I want to just hand it over for a question over here, just making sure that I don't have any tweaks. So just pass it over to Andrew.
Cheers. That's quite loud. My question's around backups. In Azure, what sort of backup technology is used? And is any backup technology used, or is it just down to replication? In other words, you know, shifting it to other sites. And the second part of the question is if on-prem, using traditionally uses SQL Server backup technology, are the products like Veeam, you know, with V8 coming out where you can do SQL Server backups and do log file backups and recoveries, are they supported officially by Microsoft?
So are you talking about SQL and VM or Azure SQL Database?
SQL Database, but...
Okay, well that's...
Yeah.
So that was two questions, remember that, right? I'm just watching that. So
Azure SQL Database.
So I'll
do the backup thing, you can do the other thing. One of the things that I love at the moment with the SQL Azure, especially 2012, SP1 CU8. I have to get that right. Yeah, SP1 CU8, you can now do URL backups. They are fantastic. They are so easy to set up. There is a limitation on it, and I'm grinding Cameron's gears about it because I've got a 1 terabyte thing on them, which I'm grinding him about and saying to him, but they are fantastic. And what it means for all of my clients that I currently put URL backups for is very simple. There's no more tapes, and it's always on. You don't have to phone whoever to get the tape to come in. It is really quick, and the latency problem that you referred to with the URL backups, what we have found is actually latency goes away because it doesn't matter anymore. It takes me 8 hours to back up to tape. It takes me half an hour to back up to Singapore at the moment for the same database. So for us, the URL backups is fantastic. And that's one thing I actually want to put in. If you put a SQL Server database in Azure and you're going to host it up in there, do backups. Do them. They cheap. That's $45 for 6 terabytes a month. That's pretty awesome. So do them. Always do them. The other thing is that 2014 has now come out with, well, when it came out, it's got this thing called blob storage that you can attach to it. So which means it's on your virtual machine, which is what you're basically asking. On your virtual machine, you've got no disks whatsoever for your SQL Server database. So you can create 16 or 24 or go crazy, create 100 if all I get. But what that also means is that your SQL Server machine, the VMware machine that you have set up on there, the only thing you have to take care of is your IOPS. That's it. You don't have to worry about the amount of disk you can attach to it or any of the limitations that SQL Server or that your VMware machine has on Azure. And with the blob storage is what we have found, and I've been playing around with, this is one of the other things that has been great for our DR scenario. It is that when I've got those disks in the blob storage, if I lose that virtual machine for whatever the reason is, to start up another virtual machine and attach those blob storages onto it takes me 5 minutes, and it's on immediately. So yes, you don't have always on, but for people like with the standard version and everything else with it, it gives them an option to start up machines within that 5 to 10 minutes. So yes, go for it. Just back up to blob storage all the time. People are deleting disks. I think you can buy now a disk on Trade Me for $10 that used to cost you $1,000. So yeah, do it.
Well, is that what you're at? You're talking Azure and SQL in a VM or Azure SQL Database? IaaS or Platform as a Service? Yeah, see, that's why I was, I'm like, yeah, that's two different things. Huh?
That's right, yeah. So the one that yeah. Logan
asked
was around SQL Server and Azure VM.
Well, he answered also, you know, because you can also, SQL 14, you can still on-prem back up your database to a URL, right? And that's, I think that we don't want to muddy the water and get people confused. You're talking about Azure SQL Database, which is SQL Server as a Service, right? So there's several backup strategies there, right? Microsoft is always doing back. We do weekly full, daily differential, and every 5 minutes we do transactional backups, right? We've recently made that available through our new service tiers to be able to do a point in time restore. So we're always doing backups, right? So you don't have to worry about doing backups. We do those for you, and now we give you the ability to do a point-in-time restore, depending on your service tier, to a point-in-time, either within, you know, 7 to 35 days, depending on your service tier. So you can say, I need to go back to September 15th at 2:32 in the morning, I mean to the second, and say, I need to restore from this point-in-time, right? So it helps with those kind of oops scenarios, like, you know, you had a rogue developer do a delete without a where clause, right? And I need to recover from that, or things like that, right? So we're doing backups, but you can also do, there's also on the flip side of that, is you can also do your own type of backups, right? So we don't do, you know, what's called automated exports, right? So take that database, and it's just basically doing a full copy down to either blob storage or on-prem. Right, and that's just the ability to say, I need a copy of my database because I want to restore it locally or restore it to another Azure SQL server and restore it there, right? So, yes, but it just depends on what you want to do.
Perfect.
So I'm not familiar with Veeam, but are you talking about just like a database snapshot? Well, that's what the kind of the export is, right? It just takes a database snapshot and, right,
Yeah. Just to add on to that, that's perfect, right? So we have few editions in Azure, SQL Azure. We've got Web Business Standard, and then you've got premium editions. We've got P1, P2, P3, and P4. When all the premium editions gives you mission critical performance. We have got something called as DTU, which is Database Throughput Unit. Based on that, you can migrate. Now, so all the premium editions, P1, P2, P3, P4, which is going to be going live, I think, this month, if I'm not wrong. That's what I've heard. And you get automated backups, right? So you get, as you know, you mentioned, Scott mentioned, that you can do a point in time up to 35 days in P3, right, based on that. But automated export, which Scott also mentioned, and with some of the tiers, which is going to be going off by March next year, automated export has certain limitations of 10 databases per subscription. So you just need to be aware that, you know, you really want to use that. And also, we've had some issues with it. So I'm just going to just be a little honest about that because we've got enough feedback to work on it. And probably by another 6 months, we should have a good release of it. But just yeah, on that side. So.
You know, it depends on what you're trying to do, right? Because do you want transactional consistency, things like that, right? And so it would depend on what kind of scenarios you're trying to solve. But I guess, you know, in summary, yeah, you can do backups and depends what you want out of it. But again, I mean, even on-prem, just set that aside. I think what he was talking about is even if you're not using SQL Database, you should be, if you're using SQL Server 2012 or 2014, you should be using this backup to URL for your backups because, you know, you don't have to worry about disk space. You don't have to, you know, and it's much cheaper than, you know, SAN storage by far.
And you also get a managed backup in
yeah.
SQL 2014 where you can actually configure the backup to automatically take place just
yeah.
like your tape.
Based on your OLTP transactions, yeah.
Right.
The downside with that is it's, you know, not configurable. It's turn it on and go. And based on, you know, the workload and things like that, it just goes, but it's still awesome.
It's time to give away another bathrobe.
Yeah.
I feel it's time. And I want to ask the panel because we've had two really good questions here. I would like you guys to vote who was the best question. Don't, Logan, don't try and corrupt the other judges, mate. I'm watching you, all right? So we've got the ag research question around, what was it, around my VMs failing with SQL. And we've got Azure backups. So hands up for virtualization and failover scenarios versus, so first off, first vote for this side. Number two?
No, I have no idea. That was rock, paper,
scissors. All right, okay. All right, so don't make me make the decision. I don't want, you guys are too scared.
Well, I'm leaning toward this guy because it was an Azure question, and this guy was talking VMware, so.
Yeah, but, yeah.
Sorry.
All right, okay. Well, we'll give one more bathrobe over to the Ed. Right, we're going
to. We have a question here.
Yeah, you have a question? Pass over to the Ed.
I'm interested in what the panel's recommendation would be to customers who are looking to migrate on-prem workloads to Azure and have the opportunity to re-engineer or reconfigure that application to use Azure SQL Database. What would be the sort of primary, without going too much detail, what would be your sort of primary recommendations or considerations that they should think about in terms of advantages, disadvantages of one over the other?
Sorry. So one of the things that we have found with Azure specifically, and it's not just for our SQL Server, it's actually for any of the application servers that we transfer up. Now, most of you are much probably aware of SAP and its requirements and how it hogs everything and kills the world and does all sorts of beautiful things. One of the things we found is that when we went to Azure, is we had to play with the different scenarios that are in the cloud, because your every day of going and saying I need 24 gig and 4 CPU does not count in Azure anymore. What we had to go look at is how many data files I get for my machine, how many IOPS I get for my machine, and then I have to go work that back towards what is my application requirements. Is it cheaper for me to put down two app servers for one DB? Do I split my DBs up so that each machine has its own databases? And that's the type of things that you have to look for. And the only way I can tell you is to do it properly is to actually go and play in Azure. That's the only way to get, there is no perfect answer, and there's no little golden leaf you can pick and go and say, okay, that will work for you. You actually have to go play with it.
So I'm going to simplify it for you a little bit. I agree, but I'm going to disagree a little bit, because now you can say with the new service tiers, you can say I need guaranteed performance, right? So I need X amount of CPUs, I need X amount of memory, the DTUs that we talked about, right? So you can do that, but I agree with the standpoint that it's more about testing, but you have to look at when you're migrating, you have to look at, for example, what's supported in Azure SQL Database, SQL Azure, or an on-prem, right? Are you using full text search? Are you using encryption? Are you using, some data types, XML indexes? Are you, what are you using that's currently not supported in Azure SQL Database? Does it make it an easier lift and shift, right? If you want the benefits of Azure, go to an Azure VM, SQL in a VM first, right? Because you still get the, high availability and some benefits of Azure. But that's, that makes it difficult to scale a little bit, right? But if you're not using, if you don't care about encryption, and if you don't, you're not using some of these technologies, then, migrate. And I would agree with him, go and test, right? Because you can, with the new service tiers, test to figure out what kind of performance you want and you can get out of it. But I would, in a heartbeat, I would pick over Azure SQL Database over a VM in a heartbeat, just because of the ability to do sharding and performance and scaling and things like that. Right, but you have to look at what's supported and what's not supported. I mean, it's SQL Server, but things like full text search, which you can now use Azure Search for, right? Are you using encryption? Are you using SQL CLR? Things like that, right? So you have to go look at, is this important for me? Okay, no, so I got to go to SQL in a VM.
Mine's short and sweet. Other than feature availability, the two that I was just going to say are basically IOPS and your sharding strategy. They're the two that you need to rethink if you don't already have you know, if you don't have a sharding strategy, you're probably going to need to look at one, or at least start thinking about what it will look like in a couple of years, because that's where you start getting the real sort of power out of Azure. And yeah, the IOPS comes back to the IOPS testing. You really have to put it through its paces and see whether you should be going straight to sharding. And a lot of times with things we had to play around, we didn't have something that was sharded, and actually it was much, much better if we preempted that, sharded it straight away, because we got better IOPS performance.
Just to add on to that question, it's a very good question, actually. You've got some tools in the market which you can use. One is our own SQL Server data tools, which you can, where you can compare, yeah, looking at us. You can create a project out of your database and eventually just set the option on that project to Microsoft SQL Azure and compare the schema between the databases, or the, you know, the project and the database. And it tells you what other things doesn't work. And as, you know, Scott mentioned, XML indexes, the major ones, right? Extended properties. These are the ones which gives you a limitation, where, you know, you get some sort of a showstopper. I've done for a few of my customers where they have migrated, and we have migrated really well. So this is not a major issue. And just to add to what Hannah said around the sharding, it's about partitioning, right? So 500 GB is what our limitation is with premium editions. What about going above and beyond 500 GB? That's when you do sharding or horizontal partitioning and you add another 500 GB to it. But I think it's a very good question you asked. And also there's an Azure Migration DB tool. If you search for it, you can also put a profiler trace. If you take a profiler trace from your SQL Server, put that into that workload, and it tells you, after analyzing, you know, what are your pain points are in terms of migration, and also does a BCP out, and then you can do a BCP in on top of it. So it's rather simple. Quite a few tools in the market which you can use. Sorry, thanks.
Just not to hog the conversation, but I think this is more about, as we go from, if you start looking at new the service tiers, you know, I don't want to, you know, Hannah's been awesome, but we're shifting from IOPS into the go DTUs, which is less about IOPS now, more about percentages of how much, you know, you get for CPU and memory and things like that. So, you know, if you're going to move to Azure SQL Database, then look at the new, go study DTUs, go study the new service tiers, and it's less about IOPS and more about, database throughput units, right? That predictable performance.
Right. I just want to say we're going to be closing down a little bit early, only 5 minutes. But the good news is we get to go to the drinks early. And the great thing about that is that our panel will be available. So that means we've got a couple of more questions that we're able to go for. So I'm just basically see how many people want to ask one more question. Anyone over on this side? You guys are very quiet. I'm really concerned about you guys, because you've been.
We have two questions.
We have two questions here. All right. So what I'll do is I'll do one over here, okay. And we'll do one over there, and you get to pick. All right. So while you're picking, I'll just hand over to.
If you were taking an existing SQL 2008 R2 database, which is mirrored on-premises, off to a DR site, and you were looking to move it to a hybrid setup in SQL 2014, what approach, what strategy would you look at to do that?
That probably won't be possible from SQL 2008, because we give you the option to do HADR or always or only starting SQL 2012. And the hybrid sort of scenario is only supported in SQL 2014, where you can have a secondary replica in Azure VM. So yeah, no direct way. Upgrade, that's the only way out. Thanks.
All right, guys,
Hello, this might be the wrong forum, but can you give me the name of somebody who can help us with Microsoft Azure? We've been trying to move dozens of terabytes backup from New Zealand to North America, and have hit issues and have sort of put part of that project on ice. Is there a name of somebody I can talk to?
Start with us two, and then we'll go from there.
Locally.
Okay.
Locally, come and see me. I'll give you my key. Oh, sorry, my card.
How about your bathrobe? Can I have your bathrobe?
That's terrible. I get my own bathrobe.
You got a very nice bathrobe.
You had the wrong part.
TMI. TMI.
One more question.
This is more on HADR.
We had a recent weird problem. The server storage died, which had my distributor. I know database replication still has its place. We heavily use it, and the distributor died, and then the scripts for publications and everything was on the same storage, which took away. It was fun recreating it. So for the HIE, DR, that availability group, if I'm using distribution server, is it going to scale up with the publisher being aware that, yeah, it has failed over and starts picking up from there, or it just not going to work?
You want to try? I'll just, yeah, I'll give it a try. So good question again. So you're talking about, just to rephrase the question he has asked, you're talking about implementing always on with replication, yeah. Right? So, and talking about the publication database being your primary. Right, so see, what you're talking about, a distributor failing, and probably you had a publisher distributor on the same box.
No, having the distributor on a separate box.
All right, separate box. Are you planning to add the distribution database to the always-on availability? No, right? No, that's not possible. No system databases. Only user DBs. You can't have system databases part of HADR. Right, so if you're putting the primary, the publication, the publisher database, I worked a lot with replications. So I love that subject. If you're working with the publisher database and you want to put that in HADR, that's all right. But be very careful with log reader agent, because it does put a bit of a latency on the transactions which you're throwing on the secondary, because log reader agents does actually puts a lot of heavy weights on your logs on the primary itself or the publisher database. Right. So yeah, but no distribution database, no system database as part of HADR, not possible.
Oh, I think we are running out of time for the questions at the moment. Miles, you have to give that
rope. I have to give one more prize away. And, man, we've had some great questions. Like, there's one over here, there's one over there, there's one here. Anna, I've given out so many bathrobes. Do you want to pick someone? Considering I've got word salad, I can't seem to speak properly.
It's unpacked, though, if you don't mind.
It's slightly used.
Slightly used. And you have to wash it, possibly. But that's yours.
Yeah. Here we go. Well done. Okay. So, look, I want everyone to give our speakers a big hand, but not just yet. What I want to do is I want to ask you guys, in 1 minute, what's top of mind for you with your operational systems that you're looking after? What's the one thing that you're focusing on right now?
Azure. I just finished a discussion with a customer in the afternoon during lunch, and they're planning to migrate most of their workloads to Azure. I've got another one on Friday, because I will be doing a lot of Azure work in ANZ, part of an Azure Ranger program, and I think it's a tremendous amount of benefits going to Azure, configuring and comparing PaaS and IaaS, but Azure, definitely.
For me, it's blob storage. Love it. I think it's going to be the next thing that will definitely separate SQL Server from the other databases. It gives you so much flexibility, and it can drive your cost down, because let's face it, at the end of the day, technology people, we love the technology, but the CFO, he likes cutting our budgets.
Azure as well, but in a hybrid, the SQL hybrid scenarios, right? You guys spend a lot of money on your current infrastructure. We don't want you to get rid of that, so we look at, HADR, so Azure from hybrid scenarios.
Slightly different. Elastic scaling and all the challenges that provides, including hybrid models for, keeping some things on-prem, some things in the cloud, able to treat them like cattle and kill them off and start them up as we needed.
Again, Azure, but in my case, I've got two things I have to do this year, which is the Azure Recovery Services for Hyper-V and the Image Scout for VMware and for physical servers. So that's my priority.
Everyone, I want you to give a big hand for our panel. Thank you so much. This has been our first open mic session. I want some feedback. I know we didn't have a big panel. There's a lot of experts in the room here that didn't get a chance to be up here. As you know, this room's not the easiest one to be in. There's a couple of speakers here that are actually speaking this year. There's Leo. He's doing a session on mission-critical scenarios in New Zealand. I recommend you come and have a chat to him. We're all going to go and join to, I think it's the hub we're going for drinks. Yeah. Please come up and have a chat to experts. I know it's a bit daunting coming up and asking questions. These guys are available to have a chat to now. Thank you again, and please do your evals. Rate this the highest session in TechEd. Let's get this being the number one
thank
session.
You guys. Thank you.